We're going to talk about the fact that, well, Seattle's new mayor is going to be a woman. One woman after 20 men in a row. Sounds like Seattle's making progress.
Well, we've only had eight since we started this. And I should say, if you wanted to talk about bigotry, actually, Kate and I are very well versed in being able to do so. All you have to do is elect more women, appoint more women, hire more women, and you would have less bigotry.
Let's talk about women and bigotry with Kathy and Kate. Let me tell you who you're hearing. We have a conversation about politics, and also I just want to say today about business, because I just saw this study showing that the more education a Seattle woman has, the wider the pay gap is between her and a man with the same education and the same job. And the study's author blamed our tech industry. So, two guests here, they work to help women become leaders, elected leaders, corporate leaders. That was Kathy Allen, who runs political campaigns, runs the communications firm, The Connections Group, co-founder of the Center for Women and Democracy, University of Washington. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, we're no longer at the University of Washington. We kind of grew up and we kind of have spread our wings, even though we still have great supporters over here.
Congratulations on the wing spreading and the growing up. And Professor Kate Gothall's with us, running several leadership programs for women at the Foster School of Business at the UW. Haven't spread your wings beyond the UW, right? And the Women Board, the Women Board Directors Development Program. Professor, thank you for joining us as well. So, Kathy Allen, Seattle City Council is majority women. The mayor will be a woman, as is Tacoma's mayor and Mukilteo's and Bellingham, Bremerton, Everett. Political equality achieved, right?
Not necessarily the case, my dear.
Oh?
Actually, as ever, we have a headline that says, "We done good." What happens is quite thereafter, we end up taking a look at the greatest discrepancy in regards to the highest educated women and their counterparts in the men's world having this great big huge gap. You know, there's never a time when a woman really wins anything. There are temporary...
Wait, say that again?
There's never a time when a woman ends up saying, well, now this is over.
Uh-huh.
Now I don't have to worry about a woman's right to choose. I don't have to worry about equal pay. I don't have to worry about being considered a person that could be promoted based upon my gender. The fact is, it never happens that way.
Okay, so top
history or others.
Okay, top three vote getters, since I referred to Seattle's mayoral primary, top three vote getters are women. Historic, meaningless, what?
Very historic. It's more from the point of view that all of these women ran. In fact, what we did have in terms of this over 20 that ran, we had 10 of them that were women. This is very important in terms of this. When women run, women win. When women are appointed managers or when they're appointed to high levels of, I would say, corporate love, the fact is that it's usually because they're nominated and there are several.
Yes. Let's talk more about that. Professor Gothall's Foster School of Business, you ask your students to name five women leaders in 60 seconds, and what happens?
What happens is their answers fall into one of two categories. One category, my mom, my grandma, my aunt, so a relative. And the other is a big media figure. So they might name like a Michelle Obama or Beyonce or Oprah. But what I don't see are names in between. Names like, a Patty Murray, for example, Elizabeth Warren, a politician, a business leader.
Meg Whitman, Hewlett-Packard.
Nope.
That doesn't
Indra
come up. Indra Nooyi from Pepsi doesn't come up.
And so these are the women that professionally my students can realistically emulate, and they don't come to mind. They don't come to mind. Now, mind you, give me 10 weeks with them and they'll have 60 quick answers at the end. But it's so important for women to see a female mayor.
What do you say? So that you ask a student, name five women leaders in 60 seconds, and they say mom and grandma and Hillary Clinton and Oprah. Can't think of five. And what do you do next? What do you say to that student?
What I do is I basically list on the board who they're naming. And so we can see that they're all in the relative column on one end and they're all in the celebrity column on the other, and that there's this big gap in the middle. And even just seeing that makes them think differently.
And then what? What do they do with that information, that insight?
Basically, they set out to find better role models. They set out to find women that they realistically can emulate in addition to their mothers and their relatives.
In the boardroom, Professor, you had said that the default is male.
Absolutely.
What does that mean for a student of yours? The default is male.
I think that when you think of leader, the default in your head is what Warren Harding. We all know the Warren Harding, or the picture would be somebody with patrician white hair, maybe Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, oh, there's a real leader. And so you have somebody, let's just take Patty Murray. Somebody like Patty, she ran as the anti-leader in a way. I'm a mom in tennis shoes,
yeah.
But she was running against the default.
And is the message, there's the default. If you want to succeed, you better copy that until you get the power to do your own thing.
I think that has been the message. But I think as people start to see different styles of leadership, it no longer is the default. And I think women need critical mass. You need to be able to see a lot of women in office or in high positions or in technology companies. You know, in leadership positions, to actually be able to sort of shift the stereotype, shift the default.
Kathy Allen, when you're talking with a candidate who's a woman, do you get right to business and let's talk platform, or are you talking gender? And how early on, and what are you saying?
Well, there is a gender difference, and so we do go through it. I think that's by merit of just the kinds of candidates I usually take, that what happens is that they usually say, well, what is the difference because I'm a woman here? And, you know, in campaigns, usually the first 90% is the same. Yes, you have to sit down and raise money. Yes, you have to go door-to-door. Yes, you have to be able to be up on these issues. The fact is that there's also gender stereotypes. Like, we always say, you know what? Get rid of that clothes of yours. You can't have a dress that's like halfway up your butt. And more importantly, no cleavage, please. The other half of it, though, is really much more about not losing the right to be a woman by being able to express yourself in clothes and earrings and so on, as at the same time that you actually pull together that which we actually hire and we vote for in women, which is they're more compassionate, they tend to listen more, they really are perceived as much more honest, they are much more inclusive, they see inclusivity as something that gets everybody more, as opposed to, oh, it's just politically acceptable. The fact is that there are these qualifications that make you a woman leader. A person who leads as a woman, which doesn't have to be a woman. It's just that most of the time, the women are using these things in terms of collaborative, getting something done, as opposed to my way or the highway. We really want people who are going to be thinking of how is it we're going to get something done, even if we have to compromise a little. And sometimes, a lot of times, guys will say, oh, no, this is our silo. This is what we have to do as either this party or this position. And what we're finding is that the public has figured out that women are much more into, let's just get something passed that's going to actually go to the problem that our people are depending upon us to actually resolve. That's what happens often, is that we start off by saying, yep, there are differences. Don't lose the beauty of being a woman. And it really is in how we lead. That is what matters to people. And that's also very politically popular now. And on the other side, when it comes to some of these other things, like, you know, you have to be able to, like, be out there and be as hard a working. You should be talking about subjects that go to the economy and not just women's issues, children's issues, and education, though those always are the most important things that many women come to the table and intend to address.
Would you say all the same things, Professor, in the world of business, or does it look different from that?
I would say many similar things. I think that what's happening now is, in the past, I think stereotypically male traits have been valued. And so if you go into financial services, you know, you're talking about a lot of money, a lot of power, et cetera. And so women, to get ahead, have had to emulate men. And I think now...
How do you emulate a man?
I don't know.
Well, first you have to be arrogant, and then second, what you have to be is you have to shake your head and look like you're listening, but you really have no idea what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's just like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
So just look at the boardroom, for example. You've got 9 people in a boardroom, and 8 of them are male, and you're the only woman. Very hard to exhibit a feminine sensibility. Very hard to bring, in fact, a diversity advantage if there's just one of you.
You know,
because nobody listens to you.
Very right. And when she talks in terms of critical mass, what happens is that what we have found through state legislatures, including our own, is that if you have 5, 6, 7 of like 30, then, you know, you really are not a critical mass. And then you have to go to your friends and say, hey, by the way, would you be able to sort of support me and help me on this? Mm-hmm. If you have critical mass with women, you amplify what's going on. To the point that now we have state legislative leaders who are women all over the country saying every time a woman makes a point of view evident and somebody else wants to jump on it and own it, they will say, excuse me, but isn't that just what Dorothy said over there? Now it's become quite the deal.
That's what you mean by amplifying.
Amplifying.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that what I teach my students at the university, so I have undergrads, I have MBAs, and I bring in like top CEOs to talk about how they got to where they got. But it's to be yourself, to be women. Very important for you, even though you're going to be judged against all the male stereotypes. You have to find your own inner strength and follow your own values. And that is how you will lead. And all of these CEOs really bear this out.
We're talking with Professor Kate Gothals, professor at the UW School of Business, Kathy Allen, head of the communications firm, the Connections Group, co-founder of the Center for Women and Democracy. The other, when I started this conversation, I said, in a few minutes, we're going to be talking about bigotry. And you said, oh, yeah, talk to me about women and bigotry. There is another default for leadership in this country, which is whiteness. I saw that 19 black women got seats on corporate boards of Fortune 500 companies last year. Women of color in Congress is 7%. There are three white people talking about this right now. Maybe we're the default as well. Do either of you address race with your candidates or your students?
Oh, I should do. In fact, that's why this year is a record year. What we had last year, a record year in terms of the number of women of color that were elected nationwide, which you would never have heard based upon the actual news that came out of the election last year. However, what's happening this year, Washington State has just broken a record in terms of doubling in most cases, tripling in some, the number of women of color that are now running and running for situations like mayor, running for actually the break-even seat in the Washington State Senate. Two women of color who had never run before are now tied in what will be by far the largest race this year in terms of Washington State. And from that perspective, we have actually seen quite the increase in the number. Now, a lot of this has to do with the fact because we've gone out to recruit these women of color because they do represent critical mass and a woman's sense of leadership. But they're running and they are winning.
Mm-hmm. I think that they're still in the vast minority in the business world. And I think that everything that's hard for a female in general is even harder for a dark female. And the numbers would bear that out.
And would you say that once a woman is in power, is it extra hard to stay there?
Boy, we just did this research that was horrifying. And that is, we took a look at all the women who had been elected country presidents. 56, as a matter of fact. And of those 56, only 5 had actually lasted more than 5 years. Some of them, most of them that we count in that 56, are under a month that they have actually managed to be president. 2 of them, 2 days each. And all of that, that's been problematic. And, you know, we have a higher record of women losing as an incumbent. Women are more challenged as a woman in office, and they are more defeated, usually by another woman from the other party.
Why would that be?
I think that's because most of the parties figure, well, we're never going to beat you with a man. We're going to have to put up a woman. And so they mm-hmm. go out of their way to actually bring someone aboard, which is, by the way, probably part of the case in terms of who was recruited for those very two precious seats in the 45th mm-hmm. District Senate race. They both were women who are pretty new to politics and pretty actually not necessarily the women that you would expect to be fighting the biggest race in the state.
Yeah. Yes. Monica Dingra and Jin Young.
Yeah, I would say in the business world, it's slightly different. I do a lot of work with women on boards. The issue is getting on your first board. Once a female has been appointed to a board, suddenly she has board experience and she's proven and she'll be appointed to more boards. I think that a lot of times with a female CEO, which is kind of another situation, females are appointed CEOs to losing situations.
She's right on many of those. And same thing is true in terms of women running for office. What happens is it's the first one that makes you actually in the market to be able to be considered for a higher office as you go. It's very unusual. You just take people that are new, and particularly a woman of color, particularly a young woman of color, and get them in the mix to actually run. What we do know is that it's not so scary if a woman has run, or if a woman has been a CEO or been appointed to a board. She's proven that she's not going to be as scary or as radical as the guys might seem.
Do you think in the business world, Kate, that the barrier to a woman that first time on the board, is that these days more overt or covert, conscious or unconscious among the men at the table?
I think it's a combination of both. There's, of course, unconscious bias going on, but boards are, in a way, a personality situation. You want people you know around that table with you. And so men tend to network with men, women with women. If there aren't women in your circle, you don't know them.
Have you heard this discussion of men who won't go and have a drink with a female coworker? Mike Pence, I think, was on that list, right? Like there were, well, we'll
I was shocked. I was shocked at that.
Tell
I
me
think
about
that is very unusual. In fact, I think what's unusual about it is that he would even bring that up as something that he wouldn't do. I think that we see that now as sort of a throwback to very old Victorian times.
You have talked, Professor, about something you call good guy syndrome on corporate boards.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right? What does that mean?
Yeah. I think that the issue with having, say, all white guys on a board is groupthink. And so let's just say someone has a minor conflict of interest or something happens. It's just like, well, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. And so everyone sort of shines it on and thinks it's okay. There is no female equivalent to he's a good guy.
Really?
Yeah, it's usually that, I suppose if we have to have a woman, she'd be okay. That's usually what they have. I should say that one of the things that's happening next in the Washington State Legislature is that actually Kate has been responsible for us actually moving on having legislation introduced next year that will make it mandatory for Washington boards to actually list the women and the men they have on their boards. We're looking at that as the first step of just getting the information of those businesses that should have more than 16%. Ironically, we're not very good. Our boards, our corporate boards, are almost as bad as the rest of the country.
We're about to talk about this weekend's white nationalist rally. You had hundreds of white men marching in Virginia chanting, "You will not replace us." And this was not about electing women to office or getting women on corporate boards. But I just wonder, do you make any connection since that's where we started this conversation?
Well, for those of us who have done any basic biology, we most certainly will replace you. We as women are the only ones that can replace men. The important part that we look at is that whatever these guys were doing, it wasn't part of mainstream America. It certainly was not inclusive on many fronts. And the other part about it is it just was foolishness once again that makes the country look bad.
That's Kathy Allen, head of the Connections Group, co-founder of the Center for Women and Democracy, and Professor Kate Gothals, professor at the UW School of Business, Foster School of Business. Thanks, both of you, for talking about this. Let's keep us updated and come back and talk more, okay?
Thank you.
You got it.